This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
Just saying hi.
And Brock Rom.
The whole job's about troubleshooting. Everything in my life is troubleshooting. So.
Amen.
Okay.
What's it like to work behind the scenes and make live TV happen amidst all the challenges that pop up? Well, Morgan Weinbrecht is here to talk about just that. She's the Associate Director of Inside the NBA and NBA on TNT. We explore her path to Turner, how Turner pushes the boundaries with technology and production, and hear some of her stories that just seem too crazy to be real.
Check, check, check. Interesting. Let me go to my audio settings here.
Yeah, you're popping now. You're getting staticky and popping now.
Popping like he's hot.
Oh, my God. JP, you're on one today.
Yeah.
Just the dad jokes are coming fast and furious.
That's all I'm good for.
Justin, do you want me to do, or we need to go to time.is? That's important.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, buddy. It's time.is time.
I got my nice cinnamon tea here, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Oh, I got a little cold brew. Homemade cold brew.
All right. Let's do 35.
Ready.
Nothing. I got nothing.
Garrett's face.
That was felt exceptionally late. That's all. You know, I'm not here to judge though.
Day late, dollar short. All good.
I almost wish I could have seen my face, but I was had the website up. All right, let's go.
Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com.
Today, happy to be joined by Morgan Weinbrecht, Associate Director for Turner Sports. Morgan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
So you sent us over some good background, but why don't you go into a little bit of that? Because you didn't start out in college doing TV, which I think it's kind of common, but you kind of had a totally different path. So why don't we start at the beginning? You're in college. How did you initially get into this?
So when I was little, I'm fascinated by how things work. And by things, I pretty much mean like anything. Like I'm fascinated about anything from like the way a business operates, from like its internal structure to how the brakes work in a train to. So I think that when I was younger, I was a lot of how things work. And I think one of the biggest mysteries that most people come across in their life is the human body. And so I always knew I wanted to be a doctor. I was like, I'm going to figure out the human body. I want to understand the human body. And so I went to Auburn. I grew up an Auburn fan. I born and bred, you know, I think I was three or four when I went to my first Auburn game. And so it was always where I was going to go to school. And I got into school. I was a chemistry and a math double major with the intent to go to med school. And I hated it. I hated every minute of it. And it was, I think, the first time where I realized you're not going to figure out the human body. Like you're going to spend the rest of your life fighting nature almost to either save people or help people or, you know, come up with some sort of way to make someone's life a little bit better in a hard time. And although I really liked that idea, it was when I took an entire course on cancer that I was like, this is not something that I can do the rest of my life. And I was like, I need fun. And I was sitting in an anatomy class one day and we got an email from the school that said, anyone who wants to work for the SEC network needs to email me back. And it was as blank and as generic as that. And I had no, I mean, like, I grew up a sports fan. So like I knew that ESPN was launching these networks that were going to surround very specific schools, but I had no idea like what does working in television mean. And so I decided, I was like, sure, like let's try it next semester. I need an upper, like we need to do something fun. Let's try it. And so I signed up with it being like all of my elective courses that I would need. And then I never left. And it started as a program through War Eagle Productions, which was our video department of our athletic department, partnering with the SEC network. We built control rooms, and they taught the students pretty much how to run a live broadcast. So we covered all of the SEC network plus SEC network digital broadcast. They would still bring in their production crews for, you know, our football games, our big baseball games, gymnastics meets, but we would cover everything digital. So I started as, I've done almost every job in television at this point. I started as a grip for football, which is not easy. I spent a lot of time getting my steps in on the weekends, for sure. I think that was when I realized, I was like, you know what? I think the control room is where it's at. It's always very cold in there. You can put on extra layers. It's very hot out here. There's a lot of moving. Like, this is just a lot. But my greatest respect is for camera operators. I ran camera for 2 years for softball and baseball, and ball follow was something, I don't know if it's that hand-eye coordination that I just don't have, but it is something that fascinates me. And so like golf is my favorite example to use. The camera operators that follow a golf ball through the air are like my heroes in life. I just don't understand how they're that precise and that good with a lens that has a very, very shallow depth of field. So it just started to fascinate me. And it was kind of that same brain of like how things work, like fascinated. So my boss at the time started teaching me, kind of realized that that was what I was gravitating towards. And so he taught me, we had a Ross 3.5 Emmy switcher at the time at Auburn. And he was like, I'm going to teach you how to TD. You're kind of the pulse of the show. You are the last line of defense before anything goes out. And you're the problem solver when things go wrong. And I loved it. I loved it. I took to it. I spent hours in there learning and absorbing. And I think what I was really lucky in my timing at Auburn, because what kicked my career off was I was the technical director that built out the shows when Auburn got its ginormous, largest college video board in sports. And I built out those shows, and I was the TD that first season. And it was probably the hardest thing I've done in my career thus far, but it was the most gratifying. It taught me so much about what is important to a broadcast, but what's also important to a fan. And I think the connections that I made when I would tell people that, oh, I do the Auburn video board, and they're like, wait, that giant thing that they show on television. And at the time, our football team we were having a little bit of a down year. So I think our video board spent more time on television than our football team at times. So it was amazing that the connections that I made through that. And that was kind of when I took the final step and I changed my major. And I was like, I think I want to do television. I want to figure out how this operates.
I think moving from technical director to like AD and then director is kind of like that typical director path that a lot of live directors take, because you spend so much time as a TD listening to a director. You really start to think a little bit more like a director. Did you kind of find yourself picking up from the directors you worked with and you TD'd for, whether that's video board or SEC network, kind of picking up little tips and tricks here and there that then you could take and incorporate into your repertoire when you were directing?
Absolutely. I am so thankful for that time. I knew from the very beginning I wanted to direct. It was like watching a conductor and with an orchestra. It was, you had all of these people that surrounded you that had to be the best at their job, but you led them to what they needed to produce for the on air. And you had to make all of those decisions in a split second. What was tough was when I left school and went to ESPN, they pretty much told me I would never be a director, that I was a great TD, but that was not going to be what they were going to do. They promised me the world, you know, we'll make sure that you can hang your hat on Monday Night Football. We're going to make sure that you get to do every big show that we have to offer, but we're never going to move you over to director. And so I said, okay, what do I have to do? And they're like, well, the only path is associate director to director. And I don't think they thought I would leave. And sure enough, I took an AD job at the SEC Network in Charlotte and moved from Bristol. And I was like, no, I'm going to figure this out. Like, this is what you told me to do. This is, I'm going
to
make it.
And it's kind of crazy because like AD, to me, TD skills translate more to director than AD skills. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm sitting here coordinating commercials and elements, but like you get way more practical, you know, knowledge as a director from being a TD, right? Like that's a crazy old school way of thinking.
100%. And it's interesting because if you talk to any of the top directors, I mean, you're talking Chip Dean from Monday Night Football. Steve Fiorello here with Inside. I mean, they all started out on the technical side. If you trace them all back, these great directors, they were TDs. They were on the technical side before they moved over to the production side. And it is not, it's not a thing anymore. I am one of one. I'm the only AD at Turner. And I was one of maybe two or three at ESPN at the time that had any sort of technical background because they feed there. There's this feeding idea now that's like you're a PA, you're an AD, you're a producer or you're a director. And that's just how they feed you. And it has created some, I mean, I've worked with some of the most brilliant minds in content that came through that path. But as a director, everything I've learned has been because I was a TD or because of the people that I sat right next to as a TD.
Well, my favorite, you know, when I would TD a lot, my favorite directors to work with were those that came from a TD background because we could speak the same language, right? Like they could sit there and they could be like, could you move that transition back a few frames? I think the cut point's a little weird. You know, they can speak a similar language, even if they don't know the switcher, right? Like grass, Ross, it's all the same, you know, when it comes down to it. But they can speak the same language. And really, in my opinion, you can run a much tighter show if you're a technically minded director, right? Than somebody who comes into a room with just a blank canvas, no idea how replay gets loaded, no idea how graphics get loaded, no idea how the TD builds the show. I think some of the best shows are ran by directors who have a technical background. I'm assuming you agree, being from a technical background.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with the PA or the AD path, but I've learned a lot from being an AD, but I miss being a TD. You know, a lot of people ask me, they're like, oh my gosh, don't you love your job? And I'm like, no. Do you know how often I count back from 10 and then hear that just on repeat in my mind? Like, no, I don't love being an AD, but it was a stepping stone and a learning point that I needed in my career. And I respect it, but do I love it? No.
Well, just before we get too far down this path, I know a lot of the people that listen and are a part of this, you know, Slack group are a little bit more on the content side. You know, can you just give us a little background kind of into what your current role is and what you do right now?
Absolutely. Turner is this happy place almost in the sports world where nobody's job defines what they do. So talking industry-wide, as an AD, you handle pretty much putting all of the show on paper and making sure what's on paper is what's in everyone else's hands, is what's loaded, everyone's communicated to properly. And then when you get into a show, you're the last line of defense. You're the second set of eyes. You're the backup to the director. You're the backup to the producer. You know, they're calling for a replay and you realize what they want is not what's actually in there. You're the one that has to call them off. You're the one that has to help them when they're dealing with a million things. And then on top of that, in live TV, a lot of times they're trying to deal with some sort of technical problem that's going on in the middle of a live show. So you kind of are that last line of defense. On a daily basis, I do a lot of things. I'm lucky enough to work with a group of people where I've built content for podcasts. I have edited the actual content and the opens that run in our NBA on TNT games. I will handle a lot of the communication with talent. I'm in a lot of meetings. We have a property now called The Match, which I've been lucky enough to be on the initial meetings for each round of before we had talent, before we had any idea what we wanted to do. So I think that when it comes to anyone's position at any point in their career in television, the best thing that you can do is look around and figure out who you can learn from and what you want to take away from that job. So for instance, I want to be a director. So I spend a lot of time shadowing our directors. I come in and I spend a lot of time working on content and graphics and design. And I've tailored my job towards that. I cannot tell you who has the most MVPs in the NBA, which would shock a lot of people working on the NBA on TNT and Inside, but that's just not where my mind is. But the there are some people, you know, who want to take the producer path, and their day-to-day is talking with talent. It is knowing those stats. It is doing that research, and it is building some of the greatest pieces of video I've been lucky enough to come across and run in a live show. And so I think that that is becoming a little bit wider, especially with COVID and the unfortunate circumstances it's put a lot of television people in. There's a lot of jack of all trades right now. And so I think that anybody who finds themselves in any position, whether that was the way they wanted to get where they want to get or not, can find something to learn and take away from that for any position they ever move into in the future.
That's so interesting. I mean, it almost sounds like you've got such a, I mean, you said jack of all trades, but it really is kind of like this kind of hybrid producer, director, like you just have your hands in everything, which is, can be cool, but that can be really difficult too when it's not your passion. Like, have you been able to latch on to mostly things that you're passionate about in those kind of roles and, you know, find creative ways to do things that you want to do rather than, you know, it's not like you're just getting stuck on things.
Absolutely. I think that I'm still at a point in my career where I'm a yes person. So have I found myself in very lengthy edits with 24 versions of a piece of video that I know is going to run one time? Is that what I want to do? No. Is it like hard sometimes to like motivate yourself in those situations? Absolutely. But the reward comes when you get to, you know, when you get the phone call that's like, hey, you know, you've worked really hard this month on a bunch of stuff. It has nothing to do with this, but hey, we have this Bleacher Report show. Will you direct it for the next month or something like that? So I think my work ethic in those moments of like picking yourself up and being like, I don't enjoy doing this at all, but I am still going to give 120% in this situation because I know it'll pay out later in some form or fashion, in some way with some person. You're always being noticed, always, whether you think you are or not, in your good moments and in your bad. And so I think that I've found that, no, I don't always get to do exactly what I want. There are definitely days where I'm like, man, I'm really tired of doing games this week. Like, I'd really love to be in the studio directing, but I know it'll pay off eventually. And it's taught me a lot. I mean, I've learned how to edit pieces in a week's time that should have taken a month. So I've learned how to delineate between what's important as a fan and what's important as a production need in those situations where I find myself wearing a producer hat instead of a director hat, which just isn't really the path I want to go.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I mean, it gives you such a variety of skills and stuff. And I think that, I mean, you hit the nail on the head talking about people are always watching. I think, you know, when you get to the network level and stuff and even bigger organizations, sometimes it's easy to just think like, you know, I'm a piece in this and no one really sees it. I can, you know, slack off on this one project and whatever, but you're right. Like, people see that stuff. And especially when you go above and beyond like that, it's so important for you, you know, in your career development, because people see that you'll go above and beyond and they're willing then to put more things on you. Maybe, you know, to your point in your role and what you want to do then going forward. So I think that's an important lesson for people to take away for sure.
You touched a little bit on what you've done. What does a typical work week look like for you? Obviously, working in sports, that's probably a question that doesn't necessarily make sense, or you're gonna say every week's different. I just wanted to get a sense from you of what you would do on a week-to-week basis.
So right now we're in the middle of March Madness, so that's anywhere from 12 to 14 hours of live television and a whole lot of coffee and knowing how to stay sharp when you really just want to curl up and go to bed, knowing that it's followed by a 4-hour nap, which is followed by another 14-hour day of television. It's not glamorous. That's what I always like to tell people, is sports, winter sports played at night, on the weekends, on the holidays. I spend a lot of time being away from family, from friends, and it's finding those moments where you have to find balance. So a typical week for NBA for me, right now, NBA on TNT is on twice a week. It's Tuesdays and Thursdays. So on a Sunday, I would start prepping my Tuesday game and I would start looking at the teams. Monday would be my edits. That's my, I edit the teases for the games. And then we edit all the content inside. We work with the design team for our specialty graphics. We work with our AR team if we have anything that's virtual or any big storytelling pieces that we're rolling out. And then we also will connect with studio. You know, is Chuck doing any sort of bit this week in the studio that needs to run in this game? Are we doing any interviews through us that end up on the studio? Are we capturing any content at site that I need to communicate with someone? Because we currently aren't traveling. We are running all of our productions out of our Techwood studios in Atlanta. And we used to go to every single game, no matter where it was. So there's a lot more communication and setup that happens earlier in the week. And then Tuesday, we have lots of meetings. We talk to talent pretty much all day. What are their expectations? What do they want? Who do they want to talk about? And we will put our finishing touches, our little bow on our Tuesday game. And then we get off the air Tuesday night and I'm prepping for Thursday's game. And it's kind of a rinse and repeat situation over the weeks. And then on the weekends, I would find myself directing on NBA TV, their game times on the weekend, or Twitter. We're doing a lot of Twitter shows. We currently have FIFA tournaments going on in our E-League world. So it's kind of finding those extra moments when you have the bandwidth, when you can, finding those extra moments to say, okay, I put in my work this week. Where can I sit in the director chair this weekend? Or where can I move over to something? And sometimes it's just sitting on the couch and hanging out with your family because you need time.
So have you started to, you just said, get in the director's chair. Have you started, I know in your email you said this, but we'll tease it a little bit. Have you started to move into more directing roles where you're calling the show as opposed to being in that AD role?
Yes. I started last fall. We had a show on TBS on Fridays called Super Punch. And I was directing that for about 3 months last year. This year, I've done a lot of game time on NBA TV. I've handled our Twitter shows. I actually directed NBA games when we were in the bubble last summer. I've handled a FIFA tournament that we had 2 weeks ago for E-League. And I'm currently working on a gambling show on Bleacher Report. So yes, I spend more time directing now than I do ADing.
I wanted to ask you about the gambling show because I caught that when you posted it and I thought it was an interesting concept. Basically, before a game, obviously it was the Celtics and Jazz game that I tuned in for because you posted it. I was like, well, this is perfect. You're talking about a team that I work for. So you have people join, fans join, and there are some stakes involved to get people engaged. Can you talk a little bit about the background of that and what you're trying to accomplish with that show?
So right now there's this big initiative, like gambling is a big draw for television, but yet it can't be shown on television in the most basic ways. There's a lot of laws that surround what you can and cannot say when it comes to gambling. You can't persuade. You can show odds, but you can't show winnings. So they sat down earlier this year and they said, what does a gambling show look like without any gambling? And that was a big, big question. You know, like, how can we get a piece of this chunk and this puzzle that's going to be very popular, but not really show it in its true form? And we do not have any partners for this show. So it's not like we're using the odds out of like MGM or Vegas or FanDuel. So we said, how do we have talent interact with fans and involve money? Because that's going to be a tune in for a lot of people. And then who do you cast? How do you represent that show that makes people want to watch it over and over and over again, whether they win or not. Like, that can be the draw to turn it on or to interact with it. But how do we continue to get people coming back each week? So they, each week we come up with a prompt that we decide would be compelling for warmups. So we cannot show any game action on Bleacher Report for NBA. So we use warmups. It's kind of our workaround for this show. And we've created a community with Pierre and Los, who will sit around and bet with their friends that comment on their Bleacher Report show. And so the Celtics game, you know, we were looking at Tatum for threes, and I think it sparks a lot of conversation past that for a place for people to continually talk about, you know, who's the best. Everybody loves that conversation, especially in the NBA. You know, who's the best? Why are they the best? Why is my team the greatest? No, you're wrong. And I think that that communication, especially in COVID, when everyone is isolated, even when you have people in your house or in your apartment, isolation is getting to a lot of people. It's opened up a great place for people to come each week and communicate and have fun with a game that they can no longer go see in person. So, you know, when you're sitting in the arena and you're saying, all right, watch this, LeBron's going to make more threes in warmups than Tatum. Okay, I'm going to bet you the next round of beers at the arena. That's a conversation that a lot of fans have sitting there in an arena. And it's not official gambling, but it is what a lot of people do hanging out. And you don't get to hang out anymore. You don't get to, you know, meet up with people and hang out on the couch. And, you know, I'm going to bet you the next round, you know, the next steak dinner, that the Lakers are going to lose this game without LeBron and AD. And then it sparks a conversation and you argue about it all night. And so that's kind of the atmosphere we've created. And we've tried to give people as many windows and access into these games when they can't go to the arena.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of like Super Bowl prop bets when people are betting on whether it's going to be heads or tails, or whether, you know, who scores first or some of those kinds of things. So it's a cool idea. It's very interesting.
Absolutely. My favorite one is the color of the Gatorade that gets dumped on the coach at the end. Yeah. Because it's like the most bet on thing in any year, which is just crazy to me, because who actually knows what the color of the Gatorade is going to be? What, maybe one assistant to the assistant that fills up the cooler? But that one's always my favorite. But it's the stuff that doesn't revolve around play. You know, like, you've got your serious gamblers and you've got your people who will analyze and analyze and analyze and make a very educated decision before they bet on something. And then, especially when you get into March Madness, you get the upsets. There's no perfect brackets anymore. Like, nobody is going to succeed this year in picking the exact bracket. So what are those other conversations and why do they start, and why are they sometimes more fun and a little bit easier to have than LeBron is better than Jordan, and why?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, it feels like there's more written about some of those prop bets leading up to the Super Bowl than there is, you know, right, the actual game bets. So it's stuff that captures people's attention. So that's awesome that you're putting out content around that.
You know, when I think of Turner, I think of a network that's extremely forward facing on technology. They're out front a lot on a lot of things, whether that's, you talked about the match earlier, you know, and streaming that on BR Live, you know, and creating platforms and creating avenues for things via technology. Have you seen that in your time there? What's that like internally? Do people come to you and say, hey, here's this new great technology we're partnering with, try this? Or do the ideas come from the production side up? How does that work?
At Turner, an idea comes from anywhere and everywhere. So I've been part of conversations where I've gotten text messages, the Super Bowl integrated 8K cameras. That was one of, to my knowledge, it was the first, but I'm going to say it was probably one of the first times that 8K had been used in that setting. That's a movie camera. You're talking about a movie lens, a cinematic, very scripted movie lens. And so it was a text message, hey, we're using this for All-Star. And we're all sitting here going, basketball? They move so fast. there's not a lot of depth of field on a court like there is on a field.
Can't stop down the lens a lot inside, you know, not enough light to
and
do
you are playing with a very shallow depth of field. And so it's like, how do you make this look right? So that's how it started, though. It was a text message. Hey, we want to use this. And so from there, it's a lot of things. You know, it's the director, our director for All-Star, figuring out how, why, and where we would use this in a basketball setting. And then you've got to figure out your operator. And that was a really interesting conversation because a lot of our directors, they have their operators. They travel them. They know them. They work with them all the time. And you can't do that in this situation. Like we're turning around going, do we hire someone who's used this camera on a movie and has never worked sports in their life? Do we hire somebody that we bring into Turner for a week and they use the camera here and they study the camera and work with the camera and get to know the camera before we send them out? And that was a group discussion. There's nobody that really handles one piece, I guess you would say, of a conversation like that. And then, you know, I think when you look at inside the NBA, you get technology and you go, what's the craziest thing we can do with this? So one of the first things we did when we got a techno jib in the building was we built a boat for them to go gone fishing for playoffs. Like, is that what we needed to do with that? Could we have shown stats? Could we have shown video? Could we have hung banners from the ceiling? Yes, but that was not anyone's intention ever to use that for it. They were like, no, we're going to create this virtual boat and then we're going to make it rain and we're going to add waves. And it snowballs. Two years ago for March Madness, HBO came to us and they said, we want to integrate Game of Thrones. How do we do that? And so the director kind of sat down and was like, how do you integrate a show with March Madness? Like, what, we don't have a lot of connections here. Like, yes, you can generally say most everybody's watched Game of Thrones, but like, how do you make this an integration that's not just another promo, another commercial? So the director was like, I want the assets to your dragon and it's going to fly over the set when anyone makes some sort of like hot pick for the day, an upset pick for the day. And that's kind of how the conversation went. And then the entire production team got to be involved in the execution and the production and the development of that and meeting people at HBO that we'd never met before and figuring out what that connect and that working relationship looks like. So I think an idea can come from anywhere. I think Turner operates a little bit differently in that we're a lot of the people who you would consider lower or outside of a project still get to be involved, because if they feel like they have a great idea and they send a text message or they send an email, like all of a sudden they're looped in on this big project.
What's the time lead on some of that? I'm just curious, because that sounds like things happen quick. Like once you start down a path, it just snowballs.
Yes, absolutely. We are amazing at turning things around in zero time. So lead time for any integration here could be anywhere from, I don't know, you know, we started talking about the rollout of Space Jam since we are part of Warner Brothers, who produced the new Space Jam 2 movie. We cover the NBA. Like, this seems like an obvious integration. So that's a conversation that's been going on for a long time. Last summer, when we were all sitting at home and someone said, hey, we could still do the match and do some good. We could raise some money. That was a 3-week turnaround from the time that we decided we were going to go to Florida and have a match that was going to look like something we didn't know. And we were going to raise money for COVID relief. It was 3 weeks, which, looking back, was insane that we even pulled off what we pulled off, especially being apart. We couldn't sit in everyone's offices and just bunker down for 24 hours. Everything was a phone call. Everything was a Zoom meeting. Everything was an email. Everything was waiting for somebody to get back to you. So I think that the word pivot is in everyone's vocabulary here, because we are, if an idea came down for March Madness to execute tomorrow, today, somebody would be working on it. Somebody would be trying their hardest to figure out, is this possible? And if it is possible, how do we make it the best product we can?
All right. I might jump in.
You're muted.
Yeah. Classic Zoom. No, I just want to jump in and, you know, I've heard you reference.
You muted yourself again.
You muted yourself again.
How did I? Oh, boy.
Sorry, I muted you.
So I unmuted myself and you muted me. Okay. Fair enough.
I wasn't sure I had the power, but I figured it was fun to try.
Yeah, no, this was very fun. I'm glad we did this. Fun is how I would define it. So you had talked about kind of the impacts of COVID a couple of times on the production, and I was just curious to talk a little bit more about that, what that has looked like. Obviously, you said you're not traveling to the games anymore, but, you know, what does that look like for you? You know, how are you doing those kind of, you know, work from a single location type of productions, you know, back at the home base? And I guess, what kind of challenges has that added? You mentioned the communication needs to be a lot higher and it's a lot tougher, but what other challenges and maybe even what advantages are there to it?
I think that a lot of the challenges are the separation. So Turner has always had very much an open door policy, like all the way up to, Lenny Daniels, our president. Like if he had the time and you passed him in the hallway, you would chat with him. And that has gone away. There are a lot of people that were sent home and are now not only doing their 24-hour live television job, but they're teaching their kids or and they're handling a lot of home life that they didn't used to. And so I think the biggest challenge is patience for a lot of people and understanding that we're all trying and we're all working as hard as we can, but we were displaced quickly. So for a lot of networks, this idea of the Remy model, doing productions from a studio where pieces of the production would travel or no one from the production would travel, depending, was something that a lot of networks had been doing. We had to figure it out overnight. We didn't. We traveled to every game, no matter what it was, no matter the matchup, no matter the rating, we were on the road. And so I think for a lot of us, it was learning that technical challenges are very real. I did a game the other night where Grant Hill's home kit went down and engineering couldn't figure it out. So we put Kenny Smith on the set. We gave him a monitor and we said, please call the second half of this game. And it was great. I mean, it was a moment where you have to balance that frustration. Like, this wouldn't happen if we were on site. And that said a lot. But knowing that this is the world we live in right now, and we're all doing everything we can to keep everyone safe. And we had to pivot really quickly. So we haven't had the cleanest shows, but we have happy, healthy people who, you know, I think we're balancing that idea of burnout. I think if we were traveling during this, you would see a lot of serious burnout from people. And I think people can step away. We can take 3 hours and just be at home, teach our kids, handle whatever it is we need to handle, take care of parents, grandparents, and being patient with people, knowing that that is just as important as answering that email and getting that idea out and knowing if it's possible. And so I think that we have a lot to be proud of in the past year for what we have accomplished in this model. I don't think it's ever going to stop being a challenge because it's always, this was great, but, and I remember when, and we used to. Those sentences are used a lot, and it wasn't hard when and before COVID. And I'm not sure there's ever going to be a before COVID or a normal. Like, what was normal? Why was it normal? And will it ever be quote unquote that normal again? I don't think so. So I think one of the positives is we've grown a lot. We know a lot. People have stepped up in ways that just amaze me every day. And I think it will benefit us in the long run because in a lot of ways, we've cut a lot of costs. We had to spend a lot of money in the beginning, but we have cut a lot of costs. We're not putting 60 people on airplanes twice a week, every week. We're not, you know, moving talent around. We're not paying the same amount that we would have been for a lot of things. And we're still producing great television.
You know, like you said, obviously it's the conversation always kind of revolves around like we used to, I miss this, I miss that. And I do think there's been a lot of innovation to your point too. And besides just the cost cutting, like it obviously that's great for the networks, sometimes not always great for the people, but what are some of the things that you will take from this and say, like, I hope we can still do this going forward? Like, what are some of the innovations? What are maybe the things that you're excited about keeping from COVID that you've learned?
Wow, that's a tough question.
Is there anything, I guess?
Yeah, there is. I think that a lot of settings for a lot of networks became even more open for a lot of people. And I hope that communication, I guess, would continue. I think that a lot of people have gotten a lot of opportunities and been put in a lot of situations that they might not have had, quote unquote, normal continued, because people have had to step up. I mean, you know, every day we're sitting in situations where someone has to be on call in case someone calls and says, I'm in contact tracing, or my kid got sick, or we're waiting on a COVID test, and nobody's to blame for that. It's just the reality of the situation we're living in. So I do hope that that never goes away. I hope that those people that have stepped up, that have gotten opportunities, that have really shined in moments when they needed them to, I hope they continue to be rewarded. I hope networks continue to look at that as positives, career builders, personal builders even. And at the same time, never punishing people for needing to take a step back or needing extra time. I think that especially in a younger graduating crowd, I think a lot of companies have this idea like you need to be on call all the time and you need to work 24 hours a day and you always have to have an idea when you walk in the office, and there's a lot of pressure. And I think it's good because I think it creates great work ethic in people. But I also think in this situation, a lot of people had to take a step back and be like, no, this is not what the most important thing is right now. And I hope that that humanity aspect of it continues.
One thing I've come to know is true in my career in live TV is that ADs have the best stories. I don't know if that's because you're usually talking to everybody, including Master Control, but do you have any podcast appropriate crazy on air stories you can share with us?
Oh yes, I have many. I'm trying to think. There's one that always comes to my mind. Justin, I'm sorry, this is not a reflection of anything Boston, but it happened.
I'm not a local
in Boston.
I'm only here. I'm a transplant, I guess, is the best way to put it. So
okay.
we're good.
So we were at halftime of a Boston game, January 2020, I think. It's very cold. So we get there on a Wednesday and it was warm and it had rained. And the next day it was below freezing all day. So there was a lot of salt being thrown on the ground. The trucks are outside. And it's normal. I mean, like, I've done games in Toronto when it was negative 18. Like, it's part of traveling in January. But we got to halftime and the truck clears out. And the ADs usually stay if they can, just to make sure like everything's good to go. Everybody steps out real quick. Everybody comes back. And then the AD steps out. So I'd been in the truck for like an abnormally long time by myself. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. And all of a sudden the door flies open and my PA is looking at me and he's like, there's blood everywhere. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Our graphics operator had slipped on ice and fallen and busted open his head. And we're like 4 minutes back from halftime to like the second half of the game. So of course I'm like, okay, 911? Like, what do you do in this situation? Like, what do you do? And the graphics operator, you know, like, he's a hoot, but he's standing up going, I'm fine. I'm fine. We're moving on with the game. I'm fine. And I'm like, I don't think you're fine. So I think you need to like hold on here or whatever. And so I had to sit there and make a call. And like, do I tell Atlanta? Do I have them load our graphics? Do we have them cover the game? You know, you're making these decisions on the fly. And I think that was the moment when I sat there and I was like, for the first time, I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't even know how to tell someone this story and have them believe this. Like, what do you do in this situation? And the person is totally fine. I mean, 100% fine. No issues that day, that night, the next day, anytime. He still works with us on a daily basis. We still make fun of him for it. Like, the story ended fine, but I think in those moments, like, what do you do? So I get on the headset and I tell the AD in the studio, I say, don't panic. I'm going to tell you, but don't panic. And I've never heard so many people yell in my ear at one time in my life. And I'm just like, okay, he's okay. It's being handled. What are you going to do about live TV at this point? Because the priority is the person. And like, what do you do when someone gets hurt on site? And you don't run into these issues ever.
When you were apologizing about Boston, I thought you were going to say something froze or your pipes froze or something along those lines to, you know, cause issues or whatever. But
no, that was nobody's fault, but it was by far the craziest thing that I've ever seen or had happen. And whenever I tell the story, people are like, that's like out of a movie, like something like that, I guess. Sure. You know, we've lost talent before at site. You know, we're 30 seconds from air and nobody can find Charles Barkley. You know, I think on a funnier note, that was definitely the craziest situation I've ever been in. On a funnier note, we were an all-star in LA and no, Kenny just wasn't there. He wasn't there. He lives in LA. Wasn't there. And everybody's like, where's Kenny? Is Kenny okay? Like, what's going on? So we do two segments with no Kenny on the desk and everyone's like, we don't know where Kenny is. Kenny decided not to come to work today. He shows up and he sits down and very seriously, he goes, there was a zebra loose on the highway. And we're all like, sure there was. Like, okay, Kenny. No, there really was a zebra loose on the highway and Kenny was late to NBA All-Star. And that would not be the first time or the craziest thing I've heard when it comes to, you know, talent being like, I'm so sorry this happened. You're always like, what? Like, that's not possible. But I think that when you operate in live TV, that happens a lot more than you would think. And a whole lot more now during COVID, because I think you think you know who's showing up for work that day and then somebody else shows up. And sometimes it's not COVID. It's just, I had a flat tire this morning and couldn't get there because auto shops aren't open as many days a week now as they used to be or something. And so I think a lot of the ADs have had to step up at a lot of networks and wear a lot of hats when people couldn't come in or people had something crazy happen. Or how do you tell this story and when is the right time to loop in PR and when isn't the right time to loop in PR?
A zebra loose on the highway. That's a new one. I've never heard that.
I thought for sure there's no way. And then someone actually pulled up the news story and was like, nope, there really was a zebra loose on the highway.
If you had asked me to bet where that happened, I don't know that I would have picked LA. That sounds like a Florida story.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Everything weird happens in Florida. It's well known.
That's very true. We had an alligator that was hanging out near one of our generators, I guess. I don't know if it was because it was like cool for May and it was warm or something or whatever. And the generator overheated. It was when we were there for the match and the generator had overheated and they couldn't turn it on because they couldn't move the alligator and nobody could go near the alligator for safety reasons to turn the generator back on. And so there was like an hour period where people were just standing there like, what do we do? Do we go near it? Do we lure it away? Do we scare it? Can you scare an alligator? What do they do when you scare an alligator? And so, yeah, the things you see on a Florida golf course are
Only in live TV. Only in live TV.
Oh, 100%. And I think it's because it's live. You have time when something crazy happens and you're on a set. Yes, there's money tied to the amount of time you're there, but a lot of times you have time to pivot. Mm-hmm. And you don't in live TV. When we did the first match, we were in Las Vegas and we showed up to site, I don't know, 3 hours before air, and they figured out that a deer had chewed through all of our fiber lines. They had to relay fiber lines on the entire golf course in like less than 3 hours in order to get the show on air. And I think that's that time crunch. Like when you think about the amount of time you have to make a decision, that's when the stories get crazy. Because otherwise you're like, we'll do it later, or we'll pivot and do this first and we'll handle that later. But you can't in live TV. We had a game in LA for postseason baseball last year, where somebody came in the truck and sat down next to me, and you could just see the look in their face. And I'm like, this is gonna be good. We're in like the eighth inning. It was like a 14-0 game. And then all of a sudden it was 14-13. And he goes, I'm not really sure who you should tell this to, but our generator is about to go out. And I was like, okay. And they're like, which means we lose all power and all connection and we go to black. And I was like, okay, how long do we have? And he's like, no idea. And I was like, okay, well, this game's pretty close and you can't say this over headset because people panic. And I was like, okay, so what's our backup idea? We don't have a backup idea. So here's a game where a team might come back from a 14-0 deficit and win, and we won't be on the air. And we made it off the air. We were 45 seconds from tossing it to studio at the end of the game, and the whole truck turned off. And it was, and nobody knew why. I think it was power being fed from the stadium. It wasn't like a malfunction. I think it was just like a one in a million bad scenario. But again, if it wasn't live TV, it would have been like, okay, so it turns off and we restart and we take care of it later.
I feel like you really undersold that Florida or the deer story. Running a golf course worth of fiber sounds awful in 3 hours. I like, you just glazed over that. And I mean, don't get me wrong, those other stories are pretty dang good and crazy, but like, I'm just thinking of laying fiber in 3 hours across the whole golf course. Well,
there's a reason why, like, when you go to a game, they go, 2 days ahead of time to lay all that fiber, right? There's a reason why they do that.
Right. If there's no venue infrastructure that you can't interconnect in, it's a real pain.
When we did the match in Florida, so that would have been last May, we couldn't do a site survey. They wouldn't let us come because COVID. There were also no planes at this point in the year. Planes were still stopped. They were like, well, we can't drive down there for a day and drive back. You know, like, what do you do? So we used Google Earth for the site survey. And we got there and everyone was like, all right, we have plans. They're probably all going to go out the window as soon as we figure out how this isn't going to work or why Google Earth hasn't been updated in 2 years for this golf course or whatever. And they still pulled it off in a week. But that's the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. These are awesome. I could listen to these all day. We just need to have a regular segment where you just send in your best story of the week and we put it out because I love it. This is great.
We've got them. I think in TV issues, I think everybody runs into it. I mean, you'd be shocked at shows that normal people watch and have no idea. And someone's like, oh my gosh, this crazy nonsense. You know, I've seen a truck catch on fire before. We weren't on air. It was a set day. Everybody was fine and it was okay. But I mean, it just doesn't surprise you anymore. You're just kind of like, all right, I don't know what we're going to do, but we're just going to keep going until it becomes a real problem. And that's kind of the mentality that you have to have in a lot of these situations. But it's never ending. And I think working on inside, it exponentially adds to that because you show up at work one day and you're like, hey, we're going to have 7 goats in the studio and they're going to do yoga with goats. And I'm like, okay, all right, sounds great. Or, hey, we're going to have a wrestling match in the hallway. Or, hey, Ernie's going to break a chair over Shaq's head. Do we have a chair that can happen with? No, we do not have set props here. We do not have, no. And I think that's kind of just an everyday thing. So things eventually stop surprising you when you're always handling some crazy idea that somebody came up with and that they're all game for. It's just constant. I mean, I came to work one day and my lighting guy was hanging from our lift. I was like in a harness. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, what is happening? They're like, oh, Shaq wants to hang from the ceiling and levitate today. And I'm like, our lighting guy is like 99 pounds, dripping wet, 4, like 5 feet tall. And I'm like, and we're testing this for Shaq. And they're like, we don't have anyone big enough, like that's comparable, that was willing to like hang from the ceiling. And I was like, okay. So they lift him off the ground and I'm watching the lift kind of like go like this. And I was like, there aren't enough sandbags. There aren't enough anchors in the world that we're doing, like that we're doing this. We hung Shaq from the ceiling. It happened. So you find a way. You still find a way.
I feel like Shaq wants to levitate is like a great code word for just anything that is insane on a show from now on. That is unreal. Wow.
He always comes in with some crazy idea. Can I do this today? Can I have this? Can I go here? What if we did this? And sometimes you have to just be like, for safety and legal reasons, no, we're not. We're not going to do that. Any other ideas? Like, no, we're not. Probably a bad idea, but we hung him from the ceiling that day. He levitated right on out of his seat.
That's great stuff.
Well, I don't want to take us too far away from story time because, I mean, like, as I said, this was fantastic and I could listen to it all day, but you know, I do feel like we probably should wrap. And you know, I just was wondering for you, like advice for people who want to get into it going forward. What did you obviously had, you know, a fairly, you know, unique path as far as having that TD background now, it doesn't seem like that's the common path, but what's your advice for people who want to get into this and get a start in directing or control room work or just even live game work?
I think no matter what path you want to take in any part of television, even if it isn't the live aspect of it, who you know is so much more important than what you know. It's making those connections. I think that it's invaluable. I got every job and every opportunity I had because someone spoke up for me. Someone fought for me. Someone gave me a shot. And that will always be the case. This business is very incestuous, and not in a bad way, but everybody knows everybody. I mean, you're looking at a industry that is, it's changing for sure, but it's not young. So, you know, I work on a team of people that have worked together and on the same show and known each other for 25 plus years. So when you're the new person, that's hard. So it's those connections and those, the people that you know that make all the difference in the world. And I think a lot of people are willing to talk to people and to give people any sort of advice that they can. I mean, I constantly try to answer anyone who reaches out to me on LinkedIn or texts me or emails me because I want to help people. I want people to be able to do what we do. Television is so much fun. And sometimes I think we get stressed and, you know, there's a lot of money involved or something, but we forget that it's so much fun and we want people to have fun. And it's a changing landscape drastically fast, even before COVID. And now it's just exponentially sped up. But always reach out to somebody. If you know anybody, make that connection. You know, they need you to be a runner, but you have television experience, do it anyway. You never know who you're going to meet and you never know what experience is going to get you that next job. It might not be the one you think it is.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.